Hello, I am Dr. Randall Brewer, and welcome to Health Matters on listener-supported Red River Radio. Happy Thanksgiving. The holiday season is upon us, and for many people, the holidays can be a challenging time to maintain healthy eating and exercise habits. For the next hour, we will be discussing ways that we can all enjoy the holiday season without putting on those extra pounds or losing track of our fitness goals. We have two very qualified guests with us tonight. This is a pre-recorded show, so we will not be taking live calls or questions, but we invite you to come back next week for the live show. So we'll go ahead and meet our guests tonight. Let's have them introduce themselves to our listeners.
Hi, I'm Libby Burkhalter. I'm from Shreveport, Louisiana, and I'm a personal trainer, group exercise specialist, and health coach. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much. Welcome back, Libby.
Thanks.
And hi, I'm Julie Hartley. I'm a registered dietitian, a health coach, and also exercise instructor for Willis Knighton Health Systems.
Julie, welcome to you as well. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
On Health Matters. So, Libby, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about what it is that you do when it's not the holiday season. And then if you could, go ahead and tell us how the holiday season sort of changes your perspective on the job that you do for folks.
Okay, sure thing. Well, I normally, my typical workload is I personal train clients that are interested in improving their lifestyle. Some have goals of weight loss. Some are just wanting to improve their health and well-being through strength training, cardiovascular fitness, a number of modalities of exercise that I work with them on to have them get healthy and fit. I also teach group exercise, which is a lot of fun to help people stay healthy and fit in a group setting. And then I also coach people online. I have an online coaching business that I help people with their fitness and nutrition. And being able to coach someone virtually is very convenient because they can have the coaching from anywhere, wherever they live. And that's exciting to take my business online and not just have to be there personally. But right now during the holidays, our focus changes a little bit. People tend to stray from their normal routine. They get bogged down with busyness of the holidays and kind of lose sight of their goals a little bit. And so typically in the gym, you're going to see less participation in classes and things like that. And so my job is to help people stay motivated and on track with their health and fitness and not throw it to the side and think, well, I'll just start in 2017, because we really can finish this year a little healthier than we started if we just stay focused and enjoy some coaching from qualified professionals like Julie and myself.
Excellent overview of health and fitness for this time of year. Julie, I would ask the same question of you. What is it that you sort of do every day when it comes, you know, to dietary management and fitness, and how does that change for you?
Well, sure. Mainly what I do, and it's funny because I actually work for a hospital, but the primary role I play is to keep people out of the hospital. And I do that by going out into the community. I do lots of wellness education, in different different settings. I also personal train and teach clients just one-on-one about nutrition, and also teach exercise classes. So it involves a lot more than just diet and exercise. We also, delve into different matters like how they're sleeping, what kind of stress management they have going on, and just different matters that really are going to affect their wellness. So during the holiday season, much like Libby talked about too, it's trying to keep people from ruining everything they've done up until the holidays. So we really try to focus on healthy living and wellness all year long. And during this time of the year, probably is not the best time to go on a strict diet or start any kind of detox program or anything like that. We really want to focus on just maintaining what they've already gained throughout the year and not actually gaining that weight during the holidays.
Well, let's go through a few of the questions that have been submitted prior to the show tonight, as well as issues that you guys have thought about and brought along with you. One thing that would be more of a statistical question, one of the two of you know, is there actually any data that suggests there is weight gain that occurs over the holidays, let's say in an average individual?
It is actually a myth. Most of the data does suggest that, you know, the weight gain during the holidays is really minimal. But what tends to happen is that people gain small amounts of weight. However, they're not still losing that weight during the year. So it creeps on really slowly. And that kind of weight we tend to find is harder to come off because people are getting used to just a little bit of weight all at the same time. So most people think, you know, the average weight gain is 5 to 10 pounds, and it's really closer to like 1 to 2.
So 1 to 2 pounds, but over a lifetime, that could be several.
Problematic, absolutely. Yeah, you know, right. Just 10 years, you know, and you've got enough weight that would cause significant problems in your health.
Julie, from your perspective, when you see individuals that you're working with and you see them before the holidays and then you see them after the holidays, in general, do you see a change in the person's appearance and how they feel about how they're doing with their health? Do they feel like maybe they've gained more weight than they actually have?
Yeah, that's such an interesting question, and probably why the myth has gotten, you know, so passed around like it has, is because I think maybe just the stress of the holidays. This is a very happy season, but it's also a very stressful season. So people don't sleep like they should. They're out later shopping. They're probably online more. And in even just emotional stress with family or, you know, anything else that happens during the holiday. So I think it takes an emotional toll. I think it takes a physical toll. And by the end of the holidays, even though the weight might not be different, just their physical, appearance looks like, you know, doesn't look the same. And so, yes, I can definitely see it's taken its toll, and which, you know, brings them to wanting to start, you know, new and fresh in 2017.
You know, Libby, a lot of people have a regular exercise routine, right? So they may get up in the morning, they do their exercise, or they may exercise after work. But during the holidays, schedules really change a lot. People are coming into town, they have family members that are visiting, they're out shopping. I can see sort of a perfect storm brewing where all of this extra food is available, but there's no extra time or even the regular amount of time for exercise. How do you approach that?
Well, I think a lot of people fall into the excuse-itis about not sticking to their regular routine because, there's a party or there's family coming in, and we use those as excuses when, in fact, we should look for solutions instead of excuses to answer those questions. For example, if I have my children coming in for Christmas or Thanksgiving, I'm going to invite them to come take my exercise class with me or meet me at the gym, and then we'll go to lunch afterwards or shopping or take care of things like that. So to incorporate your family into the daily activities that you're already doing, or it may just be simple, like give the family a chance to walk outside together, play a football game or soccer game, play basketball, stay active during the holiday season, and not let the holidays be an excuse to your regular exercise routine. You know, during the holidays, like Julie was talking about, it is a stressful time for all of us sometimes with the added burden of shopping and family gatherings and things. And so that stress can really create havoc on our bodies. And so instead of allowing that to take place, if you exercise, it helps reduce the stress on your body, not just physically, but mentally as well, and emotionally makes you feel better.
So maintaining some level of exercise activity, are there ideas that you might have for exercising maybe outside of the gym or outside of your normal routine? If there is a time crunch, are there ways that we can adjust?
Definitely. There's lots of options. And the thing is, just to not do a workout at all isn't a good answer. And a lot of people throw that excuse out there. Oh, I don't have time, so I'm just going to skip my workout. When instead, if you shorten your workout and make it more effective, a shorter workout is a great option. HIIT training is very popular right now, and that's high intensity interval training. And that is shorter bouts of exercise, but higher intensity alternated with lower intensity exercises. exercises. So you could do a very effective 15 or 20 minute HIIT workout using just your body weight. So you don't have to have any special equipment. You don't have to go to the gym. You could do it at home. A lot of my online challenge groups that I run, I coach people virtually, and they can follow along, stream the workouts live on their iPad or computer or phone. It's very convenient. So you could take that inside or outside as far as physically where you do the workout. But shortening your workout is a great way to still get that exercise in, but not feel like, okay, I have to go get an hour in today and I don't have time for that. So do a 15 or 20 minute workout. Will help get you through the holiday crunch.
You know, I think that has reached the press at a national level here over the past 6 to 12 months or so. I've seen a number of articles in national, newspapers and magazines describing different ways of exercising for very brief periods of time. And from the perspective of science, it seems like there may be just as much benefit from HIIT training as there is from more prolonged training?
Definitely. Some of the studies that have shown that HIIT training is more effective for weight loss and improving your metabolism, increasing your metabolism, and stamina endurance cardiovascularly. And you can really apply the HIIT training principle to lots of different exercise levels. So you're People that are starting out with an exercise program can still apply the HIIT training principle, but they are just doing it at a lower intensity. And as you gain stamina, strength, endurance, you can rev that up a little bit. Indoor cycling classes is a good example. We do a lot of interval training with that, where we do bouts of, say, sprinting with maybe some flat, easy rides to recover and alternate that for a number of rounds. You can do it alternating cardiovascular fitness with strength training for a certain number of sets and rounds. So you can apply that to almost any piece of equipment in the gym using just your body weight or using cardiovascular equipment and dumbbells, for example. So there's a lot of options that I think prove to be very effective for helping you lose weight, maintain muscles, get lean and fit, and feels really great.
From the weight loss standpoint, I see this quite commonly that, I have patients that want to lose weight, and one of the major obstacles they may have is that, when they start to exercise, they become more hungry. is that another myth, or is it true that exercise is a true appetite stimulant and that our weight loss goal should be somewhat separate?
Definitely, and I'll address the exercise and appetite question first, because yes, you'll see appetite being affected by exercise in different ways. Usually immediately after exercise, what our body really craves is water. So we want to be hydrated. That's always great to do. And so sometimes our appetite decreases immediately after exercise, only to be revved up a little bit later. And so it's real important to kind of schedule your meals, so you're having enough protein, carbohydrates, and healthy fats to fuel your exercise and to stay satisfied during your workouts. But I really liked the question that you posed too. Should they be separate? Because people think weight loss is just diet and exercise. And most of the time when people think I'm going on a weight loss plan, the first thing they do is join the gym or, really focus on exercise, but they haven't really focused on changing their diet. And so I would, we really see the difference for weight loss is probably more 80% nutrition. And then exercise is really, being physically fit. So I love for people to move. And then I also love them to exercise, like the HIIT training that Libby was talking about. Wonderful way to really get, like she said, cardiovascular benefits. We see so many benefits just with blood pressure and those types of benefits just with those types of exercise. So I really like them in two different camps, and to really focus on what do we need to do. 80% of your nutrition is going to affect your weight loss. Let's focus on the diet, and then let's do some fun things for exercise, but then we also got to get in movement as well. So those two can be separate.
Yeah, it can be quite disconcerting to spend 45 minutes on the treadmill, and you can whip through the drive-through and completely obliterate a week's worth of treadmill work in less than 10 minutes.
Absolutely.
And so watching calories seems to be really important.
So yeah, calories, you know, certainly factor in, but we really want to make sure that people don't get hyper focused on just calories, that they're really watching the quality of their food, because there's so many food marketers out there that are just going to put 100 calorie packs of, let's say, Cheetos out there, or Oreos or crackers, and things that are really devoid of nutrition. And so I'm not so much want them to, you know, certainly it plays a part, but if we can focus on the types of food they're having, lots of non-starchy vegetables that are going to feed their body and their cells, nutrient dense foods. We're going to also focus on clean, lean proteins, you know, like turkey, and ones without less sodium and ones without less fat. And then the types of carbohydrates, using, you know, what we call slow and low carbohydrates, meaning they're slow to digest because they have lots of fiber, and they're also low in sugar, low in the on the glycemic index. And then we sprinkle in some healthy fats, and that's really such a great recipe for not only weight loss but anti-inflammatory diet that's going to really benefit their overall health.
Well, Libby, let's go ahead and start in on the questions, because we've already raised a number of the issues that many of the folks out in the listening public have submitted questions ahead of time as well. So one listener is asking, please give me some tips to help me to avoid overeating. And so a lot of people bring in food that is really tasty this time of year, and it's hard to stop. So what would you tell your clients in terms of how to not overeat during this time of the year?
I think a lot of people face that, especially in a work setting where they go to work and people are bringing in food. There's just an overabundance of donuts and cakes and fast food brought in all the time. And so they need to start with establishing, I think, their own rules for their own health and why they want to be healthy. If you know why you're on this journey, that's a big motivator, because your why shouldn't always be about the look on the outside, but what's going on in the inside of your body. And that's what I try to help my clients focus on, is working on getting healthy from the inside out. And feeding your body well is such a big key. As Julie said, nutrition is, as much as I love exercise, is a really bigger component to overall health. And so someone needs a plan to start with. And I tell them to sit down and let's get a meal plan all set out for the whole week. And they are going to work, take their lunch, take some healthy snacks, so they don't have to go to the break room, or they don't have to go to the teacher's lounge where all the unhealthy stuff is hanging out usually. And they already have a plan, and they can stick to their plan by bringing their own food. And sometimes that's not convenient. But if you have a plan, it's easy to prep healthy snacks and meals ahead of time, saves you time, money in the long run, and saves your waistline.
So thinking ahead, and Julie, this brings us to another couple of questions that were actually asked about holiday parties. Let's put ourselves in two different categories. Let's say one category is you're invited to a party and you're invited to actually bring something to the party. And so let's give some recommendations for that. And then let's put ourselves in the shoes of the passive attendee to the party. How does that individual take care of themselves at the party in terms of eating healthily at the party?
Well, certainly this time of the year is full of parties. You know, we want to, it's a time of celebration, so we want to be able to, partake in the holidays, partake in the festivities, and just enjoy what the season's about. You know, friends and family, the reasons for the seasons. And so I have a rule, whether I'm asked or not. You asked if you were asked to bring the dish. I bring one whether I'm invited to bring a dish or not. That's kind of a rule.
Oh, so you're one of those.
yeah, just so I'll make sure. There's always an available option for me, but usually, people always appreciate you bringing something extra. Certainly, a green salad is always really popular. Some sort of veggie is really festive and popular. And just to make sure, you know, there's other people too probably that will enjoy eating a meal. And I usually look at it this way too: is that there's other people in that might come to the party that maybe not would have tasted asparagus or a Brussels sprout that maybe they would if if I was to bring it and cooked in a different way. So that's usually one rule of party planning for me is always, you know, go with it with the dish in hand. But, you know, if you're at the party already and you didn't bring a dish, one other rule for parties is to step away from the buffet table. So never just hang out right by the buffet table, because a lot of times we do mindless eating. So we stand there by the chips and dip, or we'll stand there by the bar, and you really have lost track that you're on your fifth plate, you know, of dips or desserts. So, you know, really bring the focus back to the party itself, to the friends. And another great thing, because there a lot of times there's alcohol involved at the parties, which is another just empty calories. This is another way we get in lots of calories with no nutrients, and it also increases our appetite when we drink more alcohol too. So one way we can do that is to just add a lot of sparkling water, or I have, you know, what we call the 2-for-1. So for every, you know, alcoholic beverage, drink 2 glasses of water. So that just kind of helps make you stay hydrated. It'll keep you full, so we can kind of stay away from there. But also, just, you know, a little like Libby was saying too, this is not a season to punish yourself or to feel guilt. We want to make a plan for sure, but you know, enjoy. If there's just something that it's a grandmother's toffee recipe, you know, that I know that that's one thing that I'm going to have, and so I don't mess with it. I don't mess with the recipe, so I do indulge, and I have like a 3-bite rule. I'm just going to have the traditional, you know, whatever dish it is, if it's especially an old family favorite, and then I'm just going to stop at about 3 bites. So that way I get to, you know, feel like I'm participating in the party, but I really haven't overdone it.
That's really interesting that you mentioned that, because another one of the questions that comes up is that, are there any tips for eating healthy when the family insists upon grandmother's recipe in terms of, you know, the traditional foods that are eaten this time of year? You know, what do you say to the aunt or the uncle that's coming over and you bring out the asparagus or the broccoli and they're like, well, where's grandmother's dressing? You're ruining this for everyone.
Well, I want to be invited back to the party. I don't want to get kicked out of the family for sure. But really, when you think about it, there are a lot of healthy options at Thanksgiving. You know, we have the turkey, and if we can not deep fry it and maybe take the skin off, you know, that's a great option. And then, you know, focus on a lot of the vegetables, you know, like the Brussels sprouts, cauliflowers, and is another great option. We steam that, mash that, put, you know, chives or rosemary in there, and it's delicious. You know, a lot of the family enjoys that too. So set aside some traditional, aunts and grandmother's favorite recipes, and like I said, keep those small, but then add some new traditions to the family as well too. So like changing it up to have, you know, some new things like the squash or, you know, sweet potatoes, but maybe they're not made with marshmallows and brown sugar, you know, make them instead with cinnamon, you know, and some pecan. So that way we're still having some of the traditional family favorites, but we're also keeping it in check too.
Actually, that is a great segue to the next question that came up, was how can we lighten up traditional recipes? Is there any way to sort of, you know, slip it in there, whether it's a sugar substitute like you're mentioning, or maybe substitutes for high density calories that come from fats? Are there other ideas that might come to mind?
Sure. In fact, one of the recipes that I'm taking for our Thanksgiving to my friends is the sweet potato casserole. And so I love a challenge like that, because it's kind of fun to find a healthier alternative, how I can still enjoy one of my favorite dishes, but make it a little healthier. And so there are so many options to do that. I know this particular recipe that my mother-in-law used to make had like a ton of sugar added to it and butter. And so another option is to just roast your vegetables. So I can roast the sweet potatoes themselves and then add a little bit of pecans and cinnamon, like Julie was saying, and bake that in the oven. And I was actually going to do a demo of that on Facebook Live soon, so you might stay tuned for that. But it's a great way to just lighten up some of the healthy recipes or your traditional recipes and still enjoy some of your favorites. Another tip from me, I say sometimes there's some things that you just you love and you look forward to, and I may only have it once a year, I'm going to enjoy it and I'm not going to worry about it. It doesn't mean I'm going to have like pounds of it. I'm just going to have it in a smaller portion and still enjoy some of my favorites and know that one day of not eating particularly on my plan is not going to get me out of shape, as you could say.
Okay, Julie, I'm going to ask you to add your favorite dish as well. What would you recommend in terms of a dish? Is there one particular recipe that comes to mind for you?
Well, certainly sweet potatoes, you know, like Libby said, are a family favorite of ours too. But even just the traditional green bean casserole that's, you know, full of sodium, full of, you know, the soups and extras, just taking out the soup and just having some, you know, green beans, and you can, you know, just lighten it up, just lightly steamed. And I'm really big on adding lots of herbs and seasonings. So when we can enhance the flavor, because most of the flavor from a lot of the traditional recipes, and let me just say that a lot of family recipes that have been handed down, a lot of times people don't even know why they you know, add in 5 sticks of butter, you know, when one might be perfectly doable for the recipe. So a lot of times, if you modify, the other family members might not know. So if we can just take out a little extra sugar here, a little extra butter there, can make a big difference. But green beans are great. We also do some butternut squash is another excellent one. But another really crowd pleaser, and one that you usually we're going to see around Thanksgiving, is pumpkin pie. Pumpkin is, like sweet potatoes, very high in beta carotene, high in fiber, and it's just a really nutrient dense food. But when we put it all with a lot of whipped topping and a lot of extra sugar, it really makes it a not healthy dish. So if we can just make it adding in like some coconut milk, for instance, I love to use a lot of non-dairy alternatives instead of dairy. Most people are sensitive that doesn't even know it. So if you can do an unsweetened coconut milk, you know, to traditional pumpkin pie, and use lots of extra pumpkins, taking out the extra butter and sugar, you've got a great treat that's also is bringing them a lot of nutrition as well.
Are the sugar substitutes valuable in this setting? Is there a role for those in holiday recipes?
So
outside of the natural ones, obviously, that you mentioned.
Right.
The synthetic sugar substitutes, if you will.
Right. Doing what I do, we're in preventative medicine, we really try to steer clear for a lot of chemical sweeteners, you know, like what we call pink, blue, and yellow, and really try to get more into some natural sweeteners, but less of them, like raw honey, raw local honey is one that we can use, again, sparingly. And also stevia is one that we can use in recipes, that it cooks well and can be used with lots of great flavor and great results with reducing the calories.
Another question that comes up is the issue with drinking and alcohol that has come up during our discussion already. One of the listeners has asked, how do we make the cocktails that we like to enjoy lower in calories, especially things like eggnog and cocoa?
Well, I'd like to suggest having a mocktail instead of a cocktail. And that's where you can take some spritzer and add a little fresh lemon or lime. And if you got to indulge in a cocktail, having a light beer or wine is a lot lower in calories than obviously something like eggnog. Julie might address the eggnog issue a little bit, but that's what I try to do, and maybe alternate having water in between a cocktail to make it last a little bit longer and hydrate well along the way.
Absolutely. Eggnog is just full of calories and fat, and you know, but it certainly is a holiday tradition. You can lighten it up again. Coconut milk, unsweet coconut milk, is a good place to add in. And then using a lot of the things that are going to give it flavor, like vanilla, nutmeg, cinnamon, you know, we can do those things. And the same thing with hot cocoa. Sometimes just heating up some unsweet chocolate almond milk works great for hot chocolate too.
Almond milk is an alternative as well as coconut milk.
Yes, very, very much so.
So even for cooking as well as for utilizing in cocktails and drinks and cocoa and hot chocolate and things like that?
Yes, and now that they're so much more readily available, these used to be things that we'd have to go to the health food store to get, and now you can just walk into any local grocery store and find just several different dairy alternatives that are also low in sugar, too, that can work well.
In terms of calories, can you, for our listeners, just sort of rank alcoholic beverages from healthy or low calorie to higher, you know, more high density calories in terms of from beer to wine to the different sort of liquors that are available, you know, because, you know, personally, I couldn't tell you, you know, the difference between the caloric content in vodka versus whiskey versus scotch versus, you know, a port wine, for example. Mm-hmm. And these are obviously sources of hidden calories because we don't think of ourselves as eating, as taking in energy that we're going to need to burn off in order to not gain weight when we're drinking. And so, if you will, can you sort of go through a few of those points in terms of what the caloric densities are and the different things that we might be drinking this time of year from the alcohol standpoint at parties and things like that?
Sure. And first of all, when you're thinking about drinking an alcoholic beverage, I think both Libby and I did mention, you know, water, water, water. Alcohol has a very dehydrating effect. Also, will interrupt your sleep, too. If you have too many cocktails, it makes you go to sleep, but then won't let you stay asleep. So I did want to make sure we address that. And then if you are going to drink alcohol, no more than 1 to 2 glasses, you know, at a day. And that's kind of what we recommend, so it won't have any kind of negative health effects. So this is the part where I have to show people what a glass really is, because when you go to a party, you're typically not having a glass. You're probably having 3 glasses in one, because so many of our you know, beverage containers and certainly wine glasses are going to be, you know, larger. So just be mindful of how much that you're having, because you think, okay, well, a light beer might be less calories, just, you know, like you said, when we're ranking them, light beer is going to rank less. But if you're having it in a really large glass, you know, you might be having a lot more than you think you have. So just be mindful of that. Certainly the wines, white wine tends to be a little less calories. Those are going to be a little bit lighter. But all alcohol has the same amount of calories per gram. And so, and it, you know, it just burns differently than different kinds of foods and does have different types of effects. So whenever we're you know, I never encourage anybody to drink alcohol, but if they're going to, you know, maybe even lightening it up a little bit more wine, you can do half of a white wine and then half of sparkling water to kind of lighten it up as well, too. And then when you start dealing with the liquors, again, portion size makes the difference. So we want just an ounce is, you know, typically about 100 calories for any of your liquors. But I would probably tend to say it's better to stay with the white wines, red wines, and you had mentioned port wines. You know, at least you're getting a little bit of nutrition, you know, with
antioxidants.
A few with that as well.
I suppose that would be the logical next question. Are there some alcoholic drinks that have nutritional benefit? You mentioned the antioxidants. What, you know, which alcoholic drinks would provide some health benefits in terms of, you know, I think red wine has been mentioned in a lot of health circles in terms of being beneficial to health.
Libby had actually mentioned mocktails, and that's one of my favorite things, too. I actually add a little bit of pomegranate juice in a mocktail with some sparkling water, and then you can do a little wine in there with a little pomegranate seed. So now I actually am getting some antioxidant power. But for the most part, it, you know, alcohol really does not harbor any types of benefits. I'd much rather you get it from your fruits and vegetables than to think about alcohol as a health food.
Okay, point well taken. All right, another question that we had in terms of what to do to maintain our health over the holidays was actually helping to control stress during the holidays. Are there potential foods that can help to lower holiday stress is what one of the questions that was put to us.
Actually, this is a great point, because stress is just one of those things that we say you can't out-eat a stress. So meaning you can, you know, really be on it with exercise and diet, but if you haven't controlled your stress, it can really wreak havoc on your health. And so we really want to address that. One thing that an easy fix is, you know, deep breathing, those kinds of things. We really want to make sure that we're doing that. But as far as food, just even things like hot tea. I love having hot tea. Hot beverages seem to have a real calming effect on people, especially if it's herbal teas that have chamomile. They also have herbal teas that have lavender in them as well. And so those are great stress relievers, especially if you've had a stressful day and, you know, just can come home and relax too. But also magnesium is really important for stress relief. It helps to relax us all over, brain and body. And, you know, foods that are high in magnesium are going to include lots of greens. Beans are going to be higher in magnesium type foods. So there's those kinds of things that we want to focus on as well, too.
I was just going to mention, you know, when you're talking about stress, besides feeding your body well, especially during this time of Thanksgiving, starting a gratitude journal is a really great way to reduce stress in your life and take a moment to be thankful for what we have. And one of the things that I've been doing, I'm in the middle of a challenge that I run online that is a 10 days of thankfulness and gratitude and yoga retreat. So adding some yoga meditation is a great way to reduce stress during the holidays, because not all holidays are happy for everyone, and mm-hmm. sometimes brings on stress due to family situations or sadness and things like that. And so if we start our gratitude journal, and I think it's a really great way to take time to be thankful for the things that we do have going on in our life that are good.
That's so great, Libby. I just wanted to add on to that. Libby and I are actually doing this challenge together, and it's a lot of fun. But what we see when people don't control their stress is that they're also going to stress eat. So by doing the gratitude journal, by, you know, working in the exercise, by also focusing on their foods, you know, they really are focusing on why they are stress eating, and it helps it bring it back, so we can take the focus off of the food and you know, and what they're really eating for. Sometimes, you know, it's so emotional for them, they just want to do something that doesn't bite back, you know. So that makes it all come kind of full circle. So we need diet, we need exercise, and we also need stress relieving techniques.
I may be getting off into the weeds a little bit, but is there a form of meditation that can be taught, that can be performed while eating? Libby, I don't know, have you heard of that form of meditation?
I have not personally used that while eating, but I do believe...
Meditative eating.
Yes, yeah. I'm sure there is, but, you know, becoming aware of why you eat and learning about your eating patterns, I think is very important if you tend to stress eat. Our emotions take over, and before we know it, we've had a pint of Ben and Jerry's and we don't know why. And so if we can deal with our emotions first and allow our bodies and our minds to feel the emotions that we have, identify what the emotions are and allow us to feel those, even when they're not very comfortable or they're icky emotions or sadness. And we even overeat sometimes when we're happy. But to really allow your body to feel those emotions and then decide if you're really hungry or not, and go for healthy alternatives.
There is actually something called mindful eating. So it is a form of meditation, and, you know, where you're really just focusing on the food. Many of our meals are eating on the run, in the car, watching TV, and we're really not aware of how our food tastes, how the texture is, how the mouthfeel is. And if we can just sit down, most of what I have people do in counseling is have them at least one meal a day. They're going to sit and eat and just have nothing else going on. The TV's not on, their computer's not on, they're not doing work, and they're just going to focus on their meal. Certainly praying before meal is a form of meditation for a lot of people. Gratitude before meal is a form of meditation. And there is data to back this up. This actually improves digestion. It improves health. So it certainly is something that we want to do. We just don't realize how rushed we are. And we think calories make a difference. But if calories eaten in before with a mindful intent versus the same amount of calories eaten rushed in the car or on our way somewhere else will have a completely different effect in the body.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of us are guilty of sort of approaching our food as a fasting pit bull with a pork chop. I mean, it's like we're, you know, just really going to attack our food. We eat fast, especially if it tastes good. Our stomach is probably distended three or four times it would be if we were just taking in our food, experiencing our food, you know, taking sips of water in between bites, you know, thinking about the taste, thinking about how our body is actually processing the food. Probably would eat less and enjoy our food more.
We do.
Okay, another question that comes back around every year is that New Year's is going to be coming up not long after the holidays. And let's assume that we are feeling guilty and we didn't follow the plan, even though we intended to. What would you recommend in terms of going forward into the next year in terms of what's a good diet for general application that's going to maintain good health? Is there one particular diet that has proven to maintain good health? I know a number of listeners have mentioned, is the Mediterranean diet here to stay? It seems like it's been something that's been talked about a long time. Carbohydrates have taken a big hit, just like fats took a big hit back in the 80s and early 90s. So I'll pose that question to both of you. Let's fast forward into January and say, is there a one-size-fits-all diet program that people can make the New Year's resolution and feel confident that this is going to be the one that's going to work? It's proven, it's doable with our current culture.
Well, I really believe that a diet plan needs to be individualized for the person because we all have special needs nutritionally. Some of us are lactose intolerant. Some of us have allergies, food allergies. And so a one-type diet for all is not really, I think, the best plan. And working with a registered dietitian is really the best way to go. But there's so many fad diets out there. We're all looking for that quick fix or magic pill when there's really not one. The right answer to that is leading a healthy lifestyle and getting an array of fruits and vegetables and lean proteins so that you're getting balanced nutrition and not trying to jump on the next fad diet because it's not going to be here very long. But I know Julie's got some really good answers too.
Well, that's an excellent answer. And you know, it's funny, both Libby and I have been in this business a long, long time. And January is, you know, of course, our busiest month. We, you know, we're not so busy in December, but it revs up because so many people are like, yes, I'm you know, want to do it. And they go in, you know, guns blazing and try to set these very unrealistic goals. And most of the time, their diet is complete starvation, deprivation with very punishing workouts. And so what ends up happening is lots of self-loathing, lots of guilt for not making, you know, the workouts or, you know, or injuries. And then, you know, usually by the Super Bowl, it's done. And so we have regulars that we see at the gym a lot that, you know, usually will just come back in February once all the New Year's resolutioners are out. And so exactly what Libby said, I mean, she hit the nail right on the head, is that we really want to, you know, focus on a multifaceted approach. We have to I usually have clients pick, you know, one or two things that they're going to work on, and it's always individual. Not everybody needs to be a vegan. Not everybody needs to be on a low-carb, high-protein diet. It's very specific and very individual. So I have them pick out, you know, really two habits that they know they need to work on, and it's different for everybody. Sometimes, you know, it might be there. I'm working with someone right now that's drinking 20 Cokes a day, so that's definitely high on the list of something that we're going to do. That we're just going to try to reduce it. So we're setting very specifics but realistic goals of how they're going to attain that. So we don't, you know, turn their life completely upside down. We're going to work on those specific things and then try to move on, because really our focus is not January. It is, you know, it's lifelong. And so once they can get into the groove of that, they're going to feel so much better, and then their health is going to improve. And weight loss then is actually a side effect. They go into it thinking it's I've just got to lose weight and I've just got to reduce my waistline. And so certainly that's you know, can be part of the goal. But once we really, you know, do the multifaceted approach, sleeping, eating, exercise, stress, then, you know, they realize, wow, I'm feeling better. I'm, you know, I have more energy, and weight loss then is just a side benefit.
I was going to add, you know, I think a big part of a healthy push is your mindset. You know, mm-hmm. for, the longest time, we're looking for the next diet to hop on and to help us reach our goals and things like that. When we really need to change our mindset, I always tell my clients, you know, the first three letters of the word diet are what? D-I-E. And who wants to do that? So, you know, changing your mindset toward working on a healthy lifestyle, like Julie was mentioning, it's not just one thing. It's not just your nutrition. It's not just exercise. But it's a multifaceted approach. Makes a big difference. So working on your mindset is a huge behavior change, and starting with a positive attitude with the new year is a good way to start, and getting your mind in the right place to make some healthy changes.
One of the questions that was submitted was regarding perhaps, let's say there's a function, a Thanksgiving feast or Christmas party to go to. Is there any role for fasting before the party? Just to sort of prepare oneself for knowing they're going to have an extra drink or two, or they're going to, you know, you mentioned the buffet. It's interesting. At those buffets, the plates are always really small, right?
There's a reason for it.
That's right.
It's like maybe take your own plate that's like a big platter and just fill that up. You probably eat less than if you just go back and forth with the small plates. But honestly, is there any role for fasting, any sort of preventive strategy that would work like fasting before a feast?
Well, my personal opinion is I think you should not fast before you go to a party, because then you're going to probably inhale the whole buffet. So I like to have my own pre-party before I go to the party, and that allows me time to have a small healthy snack or even a small meal. And then my focus at the party are the people at the party and the conversations instead of the buffet table.
The kids home from college, I think, will relate to that concept, but we won't go there. Julie, do you have any thoughts about fasting? Is there, because as it turns out, there's this ketogenic movement out there, right? Where not just fasting for episodic purposes, but fasting for, you know, healing a number of medical illnesses such as type 2 diabetes and obesity related issues with these more extreme measures. And it was, I believe it was thought that, you know, fasting didn't work and people overate when they fasted. But if you look at animal studies, severe calorie restriction actually has a lot of health benefits, right? And animals, mice, yeah, apparently live longer if they don't eat as much. And so could you speak to that a little bit in terms of how you would approach the concept of fasting temporarily, as well as a strategy for maybe curing diabetes or just losing weight, you know, because some people who are obese are not diabetic, but they, you know, are suffering the ill effects from being diabetic, such as, you know, heart disease or osteoarthritis and things along those lines.
Yeah, absolutely. This topic of fasting is really fascinating to me. It's something that I actually practice personally, spiritual fast, but fasting's been around thousands of years, and mostly in the presence of, you know, spiritual fasting. But we see in all different types of religion they've fasted, but we've also seen it in medical. You know, Hippocrates, you know, was a fan, and what they know is that, you know, decreasing the body's ability just to take food away so it can focus on rehealing has a lot of incredible health benefits. Now, I agree with Libby when she said fasting before a party is not the best idea, but fasting for health, like you mentioned, has fantastic benefits, and I've seen it personally in my life. Now, there's different ways that you can do it, and of course, it's, you really want to be under the doctor's supervision, whenever you do it. But with type 2 diabetes, like you mentioned, there's been some incredible healing effects of fasting. So there's different types of ways that you can do it. One of the things that I usually have people do is just invoke a 12-hour fast every day, and how we do that is I say do you know, dinner like at 7, no later than 7, and then don't have your breakfast until 7 the next morning. This is a great way to do it every day, so your body's actually going 12 hours without any food present. And what people don't understand is when there's food present in the stomach and they go to bed, so if they eat late at night and then go to bed, which many people do, digestion takes priority over everything else. So whenever we're trying to sleep and our body needs to detoxify, you know, certain pathways, when food's present, it can't do that. And so fasting is just it's a great way to lose weight. Just even if you haven't changed anything else in your diet, if you practice the 12-hour fast rule and just invoke that, a lot of people have great success doing that. And most people don't know that the word breakfast does mean break the fast. And so, implying that there should be a period of fasting. So I would tell people to look more into it. There's a great book I could recommend on this subject that talks about fasting, alternate day fasting, and then, you know, what you had mentioned, the ketogenic fasting, and specifically who should do it, maybe, you know, who needs to abstain from that too.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead and let our listeners know what that source would be.
Okay, it's called The Complete Guide to Fasting, and the author's name is Dr. Jason Fong, and it's spelled F-E-N-G.
Okay, Dr. Jason Fong, F-E-N-G, and mm-hmm. The Complete Guide to Fasting. Another question that was raised is the idea of, not necessarily for the holidays, but the probiotic-oriented diet. Is there a role for extra attention to probiotics for gastrointestinal health, or is there a particular dietary strategy that one can adopt so that we don't have to go to the health food store and get probiotics to take in addition to what we're normally eating?
This is a great question. Probiotics have, you know, really come on the nutrition scene and the diet scene, and I use them with clients very successfully. However, there's many people that will use them and not find success. So we still have a lot of things to work out in the probiotic arena. I like different types of probiotics, the ones that come from soil those are ones that most are not in your general over-the-counter ones. So there's, you know, different types for different things, but also foods that are high in probiotics that actually have trillions of healthy probiotics, and what we look for is many, many strains. So not just one. If you went to the drugstore and just bought a probiotic, it might be, you know, lactobacillus, which is just one strain. And so why that might be good, you're missing out on trillions of different types. And so one of the best foods that we want to incorporate are fermented foods. So this would be things like kimchi or sauerkraut. And I really need to be specific here and let you know that it's not the kind of sauerkraut that would not be refrigerated, or the ones that you would just see on the counter that, you know, that you're going to put in your Reuben. It really needs to say live cultured, that it's cultured, you know, not with vinegar but with salt. And so they actually say right there on the jar, live probiotics. So just in a couple of forkfuls a day, you can actually get trillions of probiotics. And most of the ones that you're going to get over the counter at the drugstore have a couple of million, maybe.
Libya, I've got a couple of exercise-oriented questions before we wrap up. One listener, this poses a somewhat unique challenge, and perhaps some of our other listeners out there can relate as well. They're training for a marathon, and so they're asking for advice in terms of dietary management during the holiday period. If they're going to continue their marathon training, should they avoid carbohydrates and continue with a high protein level diet, or will they lose some of their progress in their marathon training if they have sort of the regular holiday foods? I'm assuming that, you know, this is not necessarily a weight loss issue. This is more of a sports medicine issue.
Sure. Well, I think during their training, they've been following, I'm assuming, a particular regimen and fueling their body a certain way. I think they should continue to try to fuel their body for their training purposes. And if they detour a little bit, just do it in moderation so that they don't totally go off track. They should be able to regain their ability to run just fine, I think. And I don't know it's hard to answer that without knowing specifically what they are eating or what they're doing for their plan. But carbohydrates provide us energy, and so we do need carbs when we're training for a marathon, for sure.
In terms of exercise, another listener is asking how to avoid injuries during the exercise during the winter, exercise during colder weather. Are there any specific tips that you could provide to avoid, maybe problems with breathing or problems with joint stiffness during these colder months?
Sure. During the colder temperatures, if we tend to have arthritis or some injury, even old injuries can cause a problem. Our bodies and joints are just not warmed up. So really warming up properly is so important. And doing a dynamic warm-up, which is not going into just cold stretching, which used to be old school thought, we just start stretching. But we want to actually do some more dynamic movements that raise the body core temperature, loosen up the muscles so that we're preparing our body for more formal exercise. That's going to be a key component to exercising during the cold. Just dressing properly. So if you're exercising outside, you want to make sure you dress warm, that you wear gloves to protect your hands. If you're going to extreme cold temperatures, you really do want to pay attention to wear the proper attire.
Julie, I think we have time maybe for one or two more comments. Are there points that you would add in closing in terms of how to take care of our bodies during this time of the year?
Well, just to kind of, reiterate a lot of what we were saying, make a plan is number one. And Libby hit some really great highlights about mindset. We need to go into the holidays with a plan and with a great attitude, like this is, what we're going to do. The worst time to think about, what you're going to eat is while you're walking through the door into the buffet. Once it hits your senses, you're a goner. But one of the things that I like to encourage people to do, too, is really focus on that word moderation. It doesn't mean the same thing to everybody, so you need to hone in what that really means. Moderation for me and how I teach my patients and clients is to use what we call the 90-10 rule. So 90% of what you do needs to be, what we had talked about, lots of veggies. The majority of your diet is going to include lots of non-starchy veggies, clean, lean proteins, healthy fats, and we can do that. Then, 10% is what I call, you get two wild cards a week. You can just, use that however you want, whether it's, Aunt Jenny's, special pound cake or whatever it is. That way you're in control. Always go into the holidays being in control.
Libby, any closing comments, parting words for our listeners who are trying to stay on track during the holidays?
Well, sure. I think, I mentioned earlier about having the right mindset, and I like to start my day with a positive affirmation and set a positive intention for my day and lose the negative self-talk. So if you are beating yourself up for not maybe staying on track with your nutrition plan or exercise, you need to forgive yourself and move forward, and you can always get right back on track with the next meal, the next workout. And remember that we're all a work of progress, and not to strive for perfection, but to strive for a progress each day, because it's those small wins that we make, that are going to add up to bigger results. And just appreciate where you are right now in your health journey, and it's never too late to get healthy and fit and just be amazing at you.
Those are great words, and I have a tremendous amount of gratitude on this Thanksgiving Day for Julie Hartley and Libby Burkhalter, both exercise and diet specialists. And we thank you, our listeners, here at Red River Radio for listening tonight. And as you know, Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, you should consult a physician or health professional. Views and opinions expressed on Health Matters do not necessarily reflect those of Red River Radio, its staff, or LSUS. This show will be available for download from redriverradio.org. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran, with production assistance tonight from Mr. Wally Derleth. Support for this program comes from the Noel Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, and a gift from Kit and Lisa Gamble. Please join us next Thursday for Health Matters. The topic will be healthy vision. I am Dr. Randall Brewer, and thank you for joining us this evening.